Welcome to Wealthion. I'm Wealthion founder Adam Taggart here with something outside of our normal routine. I'm going to react to a new song that's exploded virally over the past few days and explain why it may be an important milestone indicating where the economy and society are heading. The song is by Oliver Anthony, who was an unknown singer-songwriter up until just a few days ago. He wrote and performed his songs in the backwoods of his rural Virginia homestead, recording them with his iPhone and uploading them to his YouTube channel, where they received only dozens of views. That is, until he released his latest song, Rich Men North of Richmond. 3 days afterwards, the song had over 5 million views on YouTube and is currently sitting at number one on iTunes. Why? How did a completely unknown artist with no record label suddenly have the most popular song in the country? I'll play the song for you in just a second and you'll quickly understand. Not only are Oliver's soulful vocals and the music itself captivating, the lyrics give voice to the angst, frustration, and anger of America's working class. The song is both a lamentation and accusation, pointing a rageful finger at our ruling elite, holding them accountable for the accelerating decline in living standards for the majority of Americans. The lyrics are extremely poetic, and they're brutal. I have a lot more to say about the song's importance, but first, let me play it for you.
I've been selling my soul, working all day, overtime hours for bullshit pay, so I can sit out here and waste my life away. Drag back home and drown my troubles away. It's a damn shame what the world's gotten to for people like me. People like you wish I could just wake up and it not be true. But it is. Oh, it is. Living in the new world with an whole soul. These rich men know the rich men. Politicians look out for miners, and not just miners on an island somewhere. Lord, we got folks in the street, ain't got nothing to eat, and the obese milking welfare. Well, God, if you're 5'3" and you're 300 pounds, taxes ought not to pay for your bags of fudge rounds. Young men are putting themselves 6 feet in the ground, 'cause all this damn country does is keep on kicking them down. Lord, it's a damn shame what the world's gotten to for people like me. People like you wish I could just wake up and it not be true, but it is. And I don't think you know, but I know that you do, 'cause your dollar ain't shit, and it's taxed to no end, 'cause the rich men know the rich men. I've been selling my soul, working all day, overtime hours for bullshit pay.
Hard hitting, right? Well, I warned you. Now, yes, there's a lot to praise the song for musically, but that's not my area of expertise, and there are a zillion videos on YouTube right now where music theory experts are doing just that. I want to address its message. And whether or not each of us sees the world the same way Oliver does, he is tapping into the anger, despair, and rising sense of injustice that millions, many millions of Americans feel these days. His song focuses on how, no matter how many hours the working class toils, it just can't keep up with the rising cost of living. This chart shows how severely the prices of many staples have zoomed higher in just the past 3 years. And the BS pay that Oliver rails about? Well, here's a chart of real wage growth in America. Note how we just experienced a prolonged slump of 25 consecutive months of negative growth. Oliver talks about how the dollar isn't worth enough these days and that it's taxed too much. He's not wrong. Here's a chart showing how the purchasing power of the US dollar has been nearly cut in half since the start of the new millennium. And as for how the dollar gets overtaxed, which it does, this chart shows that the government can't balance its own budget. Even with the taxes we currently pay, the U.S. still has to borrow over $1.6 trillion this year to cover its national expenditures. It's this voracity of the state, the hunger for a greater and greater share of our output as our own individual prospects diminish, that Oliver is pushing back against. The rich men north of Richmond are the DC politicians and ruling elite whose policies are responsible for the plight of the working class. As we all know, reckless monetary and fiscal stimulus in response to the pandemic led to the spike in inflation we're still suffering through. And similarly, DC policy has also created asset price bubbles in financial assets and housing. As a result, the relatively few who own asset prices have benefited greatly. Remember that 89% of all financial assets are owned by just the top 10% of households, while the majority of society has been left behind. As a case in point, it has never been less affordable than it is right now for a new buyer to purchase a home. To scrape by, people are increasingly having to cut back and finance the rest on credit. Credit card debt balances have rocketed to new highs over the past year. And as these stresses and pressures on society mount, America is now seeing record suicides and drug overdoses. The fact that Oliver lays the blame for this tragic state of affairs at the feet of the rich men of north of Richmond, our political class, is notable for several reasons. First, it shows that the public's tolerance for submissiveness is hitting its limits. And what's important to know about Oliver is that he's a centrist. He is not railing against a particular party. He's railing against all of them collectively.
Richmond, north of Richmond, it touches on my time in Western North Carolina working in the factory. It talks about some people that live north of Richmond, Virginia, who I'm sure you're very well aware of, who make life a little more difficult than it should be. It touches base on human trafficking and the atrocities that, I'll say this, I sit pretty dead center down the aisle on politics and always have. I remember as a kid, the conservatives wanting war and me not understanding that. And I remember a lot of the controversies when the left took office, and it seems like, both sides serve the same master, and that master is not someone of any good to the people of this country.
This is reflective of a growing resentment across the country against the political class. I just interviewed economist Peter Atwater, who put it this way.
Remember that we also now have a term called hillionaire. So these are long-term people who have made a enormous amount of money from positions of power. And that, again, if I'm someone who is on the outside, that stings as well. They have money, they have voice, they have power, they have a lot of things that I do not have. What troubles me is the complacency of those at the top and their general lack of appreciation for the malaise at the bottom. Mm-hmm. They believe that no matter what the outcome, they can leave, they can migrate to wherever they want to, that the crowd will allow them to exit gracefully. Mm-hmm. And history doesn't suggest that. And I think there is nothing like shared hopelessness to motivate a rapidly moving crowd.
Oliver specifically wrote his song to tap into this shared hopelessness that Atwater talks about.
There's a lot of beautiful people in this world, and I meet a lot of awesome people every day. Even back when I did work in the factory, you know, I sing about selling my soul, and I am a ginger, so I don't know if I have a soul to sell or not. I met a lot of good people even back then, working third shift, 12 hours, 6 days a week. And now I spend a lot of time on job sites and I meet people from all across the country. And the universal thing I see is that it's like no matter how hard they push and how much effort they put into whatever it is they're doing, they just can't quite get ahead because the dollar's not worth enough. It's being overtaxed. People are just sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Now, connecting all of this to an interview I recently released just last week with demographer Neil Howe, this growing social disconnect is a classic symptom that we'd expect to see during a fourth turning, which is what Howe refers to as a time in history when the status quo breaks down because it fails to meet the needs of its constituents. Howe's research calculates that we're currently in the middle of a fourth turning and should expect more of exactly this kind of blowback that Oliver's song is directing against our current political system.
The point to remember is conflict, right? I mean, that's how the creative destruction of public institutions take place. It takes place through conflict. And one of the things, this is true of all fourth turnings. It is true in other countries. It's true and certainly in our own history. All of the total wars we have fought have been in fourth turnings. And in fact, all of our fourth turnings have had total wars. And others have a perfect correspondence going back. And it's one question that people ask, which I think is a good one. I spend a fair amount of time talking about that. Is the conflict mainly internal or external? Or is it some combination of both, right? And I discussed that at some length, and I do think it's a question of degree. It's very often both at the same time in a really odd way.
Sorry to interrupt, but just to help people understand, by external you mean maybe like
geopolitical conflict,
a foreign war where there's an invader that we have to deal with, or an internal one might be like a crushing wealth divide disparity.
Or a civil war or a revolution or just something that's internal. And what's interesting is when you look at it, civil wars always have an external dimension, external wars always have an internal dimension, and both usually loom during a fourth turning. It's interesting that the Great Depression, World War II, which climaxed with World War II, started with a decade of intense polarization of America in terms of politics, right? I mean, we had, you know, FDR won in 1932 and a huge victory in 1936 and polarized America. I mean, if you talk to Democrats or those who favored the Popular Front and the New Deal, they called the 1930s the fascist decade. And in fact, fascists were taking over many countries around the world. But if you had talked to conservatives and Republicans, they called the 1930s the red decade. You know, because there was that going on as well, you know, in the 1930s. And what they had in common was there was no middle ground. Everyone was giving up on democracy. Democracy was finished, right? I mean, that was people's opinion. Liberal democracy and capitalism was done for. It was either communism or fascism. Take your pick. And if you had asked an American, most Americans probably in the late 1930s, when we were still signing the Oxford Pledge, you know, young people are signing the Oxford Pledge. I will never, you know, if asked by my country to fight in war, I will not fight. You know what I mean? It was still the hangover of World War I isolationism. And you would ask them, if you had told them, we're going to have a huge crisis in this country in a few years, What will it be? They probably would have said a civil war.
Fourth turnings are scary because they're times of intense disruption. The existing power structure gets overthrown and things get chaotic as new leaders rise up to take over the mantle. I asked Neil, when can we expect these new leaders to emerge? And here's what he said. I'm curious as to where the new leaders are going to come from. And the spirit of this question is, in a lot of the great turmoils of the past, whether they happened in a fourth turning or not, you had a lot of great voices that came out and they had a platform and they built a following around, and then it drove changes. And you know, I'm even thinking as recently as the late 60s with the civil rights movement and the women's movement and whatnot, equal rights movements, we'll call it. You had a lot of great leaders and new voices come out of that, but I kind of look around right now, I don't see very many. And I don't know if I'm just missing them or if this isn't the part yet in the turning where they emerge, or if we just have a bad batch this time around.
So, you know, Henry Kissinger, who I believe just had his 100th birthday. I mean, he's right about there, right? And he's a member of the GI generation, you know, and recalls Germany and the war and, you know, everything, right? He was once asked this question about what worries him most. And he gave an interesting answer, which I think echoes a little bit what the spirit of your question. And he said, what worries me most is the quality of leadership today. It's kind of an interesting, I mean, he could have said anything. He could, what worries me most is China, or, you know what I mean? He said, just the quality of leadership. And I think here's what something to think about. During the third turning, remember, government was going to disappear. I mean, what exer cared about a government job? Who wanted anything to lead politics? Politics was a vestigial atavism. It was going to just die away. It wasn't necessary anymore, right? You wanted to start a new dot-com company, or you know what I mean? You wanted to be an entrepreneur. All the talent went into making money. No talent goes into politics, especially in America during a third turning. What during the 1920s, what talent went into politics? No, everyone was trying to, I don't know, found the next new radio station or the next new, you know, phonograph company, or you know what I mean? You know what I'm talking about. The emphasis was all on entrepreneurship, sort of individual initiative. No one cared about politics. And I think we are in the hangover from a very long third turning, right? So the whole rising generation of X, and even a lot of millennials when they first came of age, just thought politics was irrelevant. And now we're beginning to wake up, right? I think very recently with the recent elections, we're beginning to think there's an enormous void up there and nature abhors a vacuum, right? So a lot of stuff is gonna rush in. My lesson in history is that this has happened again and again in fourth turnings. And typically great leaders in fourth turnings are not born, but they're made. These are people that no one expects. I mean, who would have expected Abraham Lincoln? He had only been to Congress once, you know, 2 years as a congressman, not terribly popular. He voted against the Mexican-American War and everybody hated him. And then he disappeared. That was it, you know. Well, where did he come from? Franklin Delano Roosevelt was a lightweight. I mean, no one thought he was a profound mind. He, in terms of his knowledge of economics, he was a Lilliputian compared to Herbert Hoover, who truly was an encyclopedic, an impressive man. Unfortunately, he knew so much about economics, he was all invested into the wrong lessons. So my lesson is, expect a leader to come out of nowhere. Expect a leader that we, even at this late date, may not know.
And so this is why I've dedicated a video to this song. I think we're potentially seeing the birth of one of the new voices of the coming era. Very similar to past singer-songwriters like Bob Dylan or Joan Baez, whose protest anthems rallied millions during the 1960s, Oliver Anthony has given words to a generation desperate to be understood and to be heard. It's looking like we're reaching the point in this fourth turning where, as Howe predicts, the pressures are becoming so intense that the new leaders are starting to be thrust forth. If that's indeed true, then we'd better buckle up, because things are likely to get a lot bumpier from here for the economy and for society at large. We should expect more of the flashpoint events we've started to see around the world in recent years, from the Black Lives Matter protests to the January 6th Capitol takeover, to the trucker convoy in Canada, to the Yellow Vest protests in France, to the Russian invasion of Ukraine. These are symptoms of the fracturing of the status quo. How much more volatile and chaotic will things get? Well, we don't yet know at this point, and hopefully we can avoid the kind of total political breakdown that Sri Lanka recently experienced.
That's it! That's Sri Lanka! Come on, Sri Lanka!
But history and the current timeline of the fourth turning in which we find ourselves suggest that we should stay alert, prepare ourselves, and cultivate resilience. And while this video is a cautionary one, I'd like to end by recognizing the talent of Oliver Anthony. Agree with it or not, his anthem is a powerful achievement, and his talent as both a singer and a songwriter is clear. This guy is going to have a big future ahead of him, and it's well-deserved. Hopefully many more people listen to this song, not just to the song itself, but to its message. And hopefully in doing so, that creates enough dialogue and energy among enough people for constructive versus destructive reform to take place. As Oliver himself says, his music is rooting for us to better ourselves. Let's accept that challenge.
I hope wherever you are in the world listening to this, and whatever it is that you're trying to do with your life, I hope that you succeed at it. And I hope if you take anything away from me and the music I write, it's that this life is a beautiful opportunity, and I don't care where you are or what you've done, where you think your life's heading. Everything can change in a moment. As long as you're above the dirt, you've got a fighting chance.
If you've enjoyed this video, please be sure to like it and hit the subscribe button below, as well as that little bell icon right next to it. Thanks for doing that, and thanks so much for watching.